This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, we're the Kransky sisters on Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's great to be with you and to have you as our company to our little radio program. With me today is
Phil.
And I'm Gordon.
And I'm Chris.
Yeah.
The terrible trio.
The Been There, Doing This crew.
Yes. It's amazing how when you're talking to somebody and you'll be mentioning something that's happened, you always say, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Every time I say it, I think, oh, God.
What a reflection.
What a reflection, yeah.
In fact, we are a reflective program. We talk about history items, but usually in the terms of how they affect us in the current era and our current social environment. And today we've got a huge program. We've got actually too much for one program.
We'll probably miss a few things that we've written down.
We'll talk quickly. We'll just get through it all.
Yes. We usually miss something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, in that case, let's start on what a wonderful weekend it was and then move on to a couple of identities.
Mm-hmm. What about the weather?
A couple of social problems. And then in our last little grab, we will talk about international events that have occurred in the last week or so. What a gorgeous weekend it was.
Oh, wasn't it wonderful? It was so hot today. And I went...
On Sunday,
it was so hot. And I went to the seniors' dance club, which was really, really very well attended yesterday. And it was a really great day. And it's for the elder gay community. And they have it at the Fitzroy Town Hall, thanks to the Yarra Council, and the mayor of Yarra was there. And he's a very nice man. It was just a seniors' dance club. And they have it every month. It's 1 month, it's the first Sunday in the month from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And then the next month, it is on a Thursday evening from 5:30 to 7:30. So they have two, always at the Fitzroy Town Hall, which is rather easy to get to. And it's really, really a good time. So if you're a senior...
Well...
And you don't have to be elderly because there are a lot of young people there.
I was going to say, how young are the youngest?
Well, I think there were some young women there who would have probably been in their late 20s, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah, wow.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of fun.
It's an opportunity to kick your heels up, having a dance.
Have a bit of a dance. And jiggle. And they have supper. They have an afternoon tea sort of thing. You can get a coffee and have champagne. And
is this a free event?
Yeah, normally.
Wow. Stand back, watch out for the...
The elders coming through.
Yay. When's the next one, please, Gordon?
I forget the date, but it's the first Thursday of May at 5:30 in the evening, 5:30 to 7:30.
At
the Fitzroy Town Hall.
Beware of Twinkle Toes Gordon.
Oh, yes. But no, it was a very, very interesting afternoon.
And if my memory of Sunday is correct, you would have worked up a little bit of a glow.
Oh, yes. Well, horses sweat and people perspire, but Rita Hayworth glows, is the saying. Yes.
Sweating with the oldies,
yes. But it was a very pleasant day.
I wonder how our cricketers went on.
Yeah, well, because Pride Cricket, I couldn't go to that because I had already said I was going to be a thing. But Pride Cricket was on Sunday as well, down at the St Kilda Football Ground, I think it was. And Joy did broadcast from there.
We did an outside broadcast.
Yes.
We're everywhere sometimes.
Yeah, and it's great now because we've had gay football, we've had gay...
Soccer.
Is it soccer?
Soccer. Well, certainly gay rugby.
Gay rugby, yes. We definitely have gay rugby and gay rowing. We've got all sorts of gay tennis. We've got all those sort of things going, but now we've got Pride Cricket.
Badminton, the gay smashers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
but as organised sports, it's great to see the rainbow flag appearing in the major sports.
Yes. I don't think anybody's come out at the Commonwealth Games. this so far.
No,
and I haven't seen anything about them.
I've not seen any list of.
But I did read about Matthew Mitchum had an article in the Out at Perth or something or other, one of the website that they have, which I read, and he was talking about how when he came out, or it meant that he didn't have to worry about anything else but his diving, because he didn't have.
And it worked for him.
And it worked for him beautifully. Yeah. So yeah, it was good. But anyhow.
Oh,
so,
that's terrific.
So that was the it must have been wonderful at the cricket with that weather, with it was such a warm day and it was such a beautiful day.
Yeah. Well, you don't want your sandpaper getting wet, do you?
No, you can't get your sandpaper wet, yes.
Stop that. Yeah. Oh, you're dreadful.
I don't think anybody was fiddling with their balls or, at the Pride Cup match.
Not on the field anyway.
Not on the field, yes.
Oh, well.
Who's this?
You're having a time of your life.
Oh, yes, sir.
Here's Ultra Nage.
Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil, been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Magda Zabanski is a person of interest within our community.
A huge interest, actually.
Oh, she has a reputation as being a wonderful comedian, a film actress, a TV actress, and of course she's written a lot of this stuff for herself. But she started out as a writer and performer of sketch comedy and has since progressed to production of TV, film, acting and musical theatre. And like a lot of comedians here, and we've got the Comedy Festival going on at the moment in Melbourne, she honed her art at the University of Melbourne, where she was on some of their little antics.
They have a very interesting situation at the Melbourne U, where they do have these student reviews and that sort of thing.
Footlights reviews.
Yeah, and they really find out where the people that have talent, and the number of people that have actually come through from the university's review system is absolutely amazing.
Well, a couple of things from her history. In 1976, as a year 10 student, she captained a team on the television quiz It's Academic. Well, that was her first little claim to fame. But then in 85, she was in the University of Melbourne Law Review of Too Cool for Sandals, which is a play on the name of the play, School of Scandals.
School for Scandal, yeah.
and she had Michael Veitch and Tom Gleisner as part of the crew that she was performing with.
And they have gone on to great success as well.
Well, they were the D generation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, that was on the television. Well, people would have to be old enough to remember that, though.
And she had that wonderful, in retrospect, if you ever get to see them, just go and search for them. Fast Forward for the Seven Network. Mm-hmm. She played various characters there, including Pixie Ann Wheatley, Chanel from the Institute of Debuté.
Oh, yes, that was Beauté. Yes, she was
and
wonderful.
And Mary McGregor and Joan Kerner, the premier of the time, and a few other characters.
But one of her best characters, Chris, would have been in the comedy that with Jane Riley and Jane Turner.
Well, they performed a thing called Big Girls Blow. And then they developed those characters into Kath and Kim. And Magda had a part there. She was Sharon Strzelecki.
But she was always in trouble with Sharon from a netball and her playing cricket or something or other. She was always coming in with bandages all over her place and band-aids.
She always had a horrible red rash or something. She'd picked it's up just, somewhere.
Just an amazing character. But that show was you didn't miss an episode of it. It was just so cleverly written.
But it held a mirror very close to our society.
Oh yes, especially in certain sort of areas.
Some of the outer suburbs.
Yes, the outer suburban living. I loved the scene where they were. It was Christmas time, and they decided that they would give the paper man a present. So they had a bottle of wine wrapped up in Christmas paper. They drove past the place and threw the bottle of wine over the top of the car, and it landed in the doorway of the paper shop. And sort of wine went everywhere, you know. And she screamed, "Happy Christmas, Ralph," or whatever his name was. And I just thought that is so typical of them, you know.
Our Magda starred in an international film called Babe.
Oh, Babe 1 and 2, wasn't it?
Yeah. She was Esme Hoggett. And she had also roles or voices in Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2.
Yeah.
So
she's been everywhere.
She has been there and done that.
Yes, yes. Done lots of things.
But the most interesting thing was perhaps in the last 12 months or so of her existence here in Australia and here in Melbourne, because she's always been behind the scenes. She's volunteered at the Women's Refuge, mm-hmm. and helped out at 2010 organization. I don't know what that one is, but it's on my little list of here things I've written. And then in respect of the same-sex marriage.
Equal marriage thing.
Yeah. Mm. Postal vote. She became a real advocate for the yes vote in that, because she is a character, a person of some importance in people's young,
people especially look up to her.
People's lives. Mm. She was able to expostulate the yes vote.
But she was brilliant on Q&A the night she was on Q&A. Did she pull them apart? There was a few things that were said and she just went straight at them. Good on you, Magda.
Well, it's easy when you've got the truth on your side.
Well, that's right. If you've got the truth, you've always got the right to say it. Yeah, that's true.
But interestingly enough, in the interviews that were carried on the TV and radio, her sexuality actually came out because she was supporting the yes case.
Yeah.
And she said she's basically been always gay. She knew was gay, but it would appear that there was no reason for her to proclaim her non-heterosexuality this particular point of time.
It wouldn't have made any difference to her, you know. No. Her sexuality had nothing to do with her acting ability and the things she was doing.
And there she was. She's had since 1976, she's had quite,
41 years
of living a public life as Magda.
Mm. Yeah, but she couldn't have been gay for all that time in public.
Oh, no.
If you remember what happened to Ellen DeGeneres when she came out on American television, but she lost a brilliant career.
Yeah, but Philip, the Australian way of looking at that sort of thing is a little bit different to the American way, I think.
Well, I hope so, but yeah. I suspect
it would have made any difference to Magda to come out earlier.
Well, I met her once in a previous life.
Yeah, I did too.
And I had repaired her computer and was about to explain, because it was just a simple little thing in her email setup. And I started to explain, and she put her hand up in front of my face, and she said, "Stop." She said, "This is a tool. It's much like I have a microwave in my kitchen. I don't care how it works. I just want my coffee to be hot when it comes out." And I said, "That's a perfect point."
Yep.
And
what they are. They're only tools, aren't they? Yeah.
And the reason that we're talking about Magda is because she's got a birthday coming up on the 12th of April. Yep. She was born in 1961, so we don't talk about a woman's age. But anyway,
but we just done so.
We didn't mention her date of birth. There's calculators everywhere going tick, 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 tick,
tick. But what about poor old Kenny Everett, who died on the 4th of April, 1995? He was a UK actor, born in 1944. But he had a bit of a reputation that preceded him, as opposed to Magda, whose gay reputation followed her.
Right. But he was a comedian as well, wasn't he? Not just an actor.
Yeah. Comedic character actor.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think he did stand up. He may have done so, but he was always in. He had the Kenny Everett Show on television. Was all Kenny Everett playing all sorts of different parts, female, male, everything that was coming along.
Two interesting things. I'm pretty sure that he's the one who took the Queen song Bohemian Rhapsody and played it continuously because it was too long for radio.
That's right. Yes.
And he didn't agree with that, so he played it multiple times in a row, and it took off as a
hit. That's right. Yeah.
And he's also in the song by Buggles, "Video Killed the Radio Star."
Mm-hmm.
He's the radio star.
He's the radio star that there is referred to. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, which isn't a great claim to fame.
but he was very funny. He was a very funny man with the characters he played.
Yeah. And he's sadly missed.
Sadly missed, yes. But anyhow, that's what happens to all of us.
Yes, eventually.
Mm.
Someone else who's having a birthday round about this time, on the 15th of March 1966, Samantha Fox, the UK pop singer.
She was the Page 3 girl in The Sun.
At age 16.
Yes, yes. And
she was a big girl then, and then
she
grew
had
up.
She had a beautiful figure. She was a beautiful-looking woman. Beautiful-looking woman. But she came out that she said she'd fallen in love with many women, and she didn't worry about her sexuality at all, and she didn't think it was anybody else's business. But she actually married her own business manager. Yeah, and they were together for quite a while. Her business manager passed away in 2015 from cancer. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Her career started because she showed up her boobs in the paper.
Oh yes, yeah, she was.
She sold sexuality that she didn't believe in.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think our dear lesbian listeners enjoy a nice eyeful.
I wonder how many males bought records compared to females.
Well, I think that was the Murdoch press. Well, I don't think Murdoch owned it at the time. I'm not quite sure about that. But it was the English, the London Sun that always every Tuesday on Page 3 you would have Sam Fox with basically nothing on.
Such a classy publication.
But she's got a good voice. She knows how to sing, that's for sure.
A good set of lungs.
Well, you could say that again.
Yes, well, a lot of people rely on their reputation for their ongoing history, but here's Samantha Fox singing.
joy.org.au, where our diverse communities can come together across the nation, across the globe. Joy.
You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
Yeah.
Last Saturday on the TV, round about 7:30 of the evening, I watched a beautiful film on SBS called George III, The Genius of the Mad King. And it was a one-hour program in which the program producer shed light on King George III.
George III.
Britain's longest reigning king. And they've recently opened up the archives in the UK, and we've discovered so much about the life of King George that probably in the light of modern knowledge of psychiatry, psychology and medicine and the modifying behaviour of some modern drugs, that we can see particularly George III in a new light completely.
He wasn't completely mad, was he?
Well, he wasn't.
But the people around him were.
Well, he actually was quite prolific. He was fecund, I think is the expression.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had 15 kids out of the wife who was a Hanoverian.
Hanoverian.
From Germany. Mm-hmm. But they lost 3 or 4 to infant death. So she was a baby factory, and they were obviously guaranteeing their rule and their generation.
The line would continue.
Exactly, Gordon. But it was a wonderful expose, and it showed, however, that in modern light you would have thought that he had aspects of Alzheimer's or aspects of Asperger's syndrome, as we call it these days. He might have been somewhere on the spectrum, as they also say.
Yeah, somewhere.
He had all his royal records, all the notes that he wrote to everybody. He time-stamped them. when he wrote them. He, you know, signed by George, 8:40 p.m. on Sunday evening, or whatever
is
it might be.
Is that a bit obsessive compulsive?
It could have been.
And, sounds
and,
a bit.
But all his records, he kept them, and in sequence. He was really like
a great Sheldon. Journalist. A journalist.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, but you know, yeah. All his history was there, and obvious for people to see. So it was interesting to see this from the archives.
But
of
some
George.
Of his family were quite idiotic too. The his offspring were not exactly what you would call
sharp as pins.
Well, if you got 15, you're sort of thinning them.
Yeah, yeah. Number one, number two, number three, from the left.
At some point you stop caring. You go, oh, they'll teach themselves to read.
Yeah, yeah.
From the point of view that modern knowledge of psychiatry, psychology and medicine would have resolved a lot of his problems, and he wouldn't have received the title Mad King.
But what was the thing he had, the overload of iron porphyry?
His blood was a little bit, he was very florid on occasions. And there was something wrong in his metabolism, which actually bound the iron and the blood and clogged it up and stopped it from being so saturated with oxygen.
Yeah, because he is also the result of Australia.
Well, he was the last.
He was the last king of America, and he was the first king of Australia.
Last king of the American states.
States, yes.
Before
yes.
they unified.
That's right, yep.
Because they'd yet to have their civil war. Mm. And he was the first king of Australia.
Because he sent they decided to send the convicts out to Australia because they couldn't send them to America anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. So King George wasn't that mad after all.
No, King George wasn't. And we've got another frustrated king in waiting, lurking around at the moment.
He is the longest-serving crown prince ever in the royal family of Britain.
We're talking about Charles.
Yes, he's got
these. Prince of Wales.
He's been waiting for so long.
But he doesn't have as good a theme song as George.
What was that?
George of the Jungle.
but there was a very clever cartoon on Insiders the other morning. It was from one of the papers, and it had Charles and was sort of saying, look, I don't think the royal family will be out of fashion here in Queensland going by the flags.
Well, they're in the Queen's state.
That's right. But then Camilla was sitting down the bottom saying, damn it.
No, well, she'll be the
consort.
The consort.
She's not going to be queen. She's only going to be consort.
She might be queen consort.
Queen could be queen consort, but she's...
But, yeah, yes. She won't be queen.
Why are we so nitpicky about that? Why can't she just be queen?
Oh,
she married to the king.
Yeah.
All my fairy tales and things, King and Queen were married.
Yeah, but they were all young and gorgeous, weren't they?
No, the king was always... He looked like Santa.
Well, these two are gnarly.
Yeah.
Someone who's having a birthday around about this time, 5th of April 1929, was Nigel Hawthorne, the UK actor in Yes Minister, and he died in 2001. Yes, Gordon, he played in a play, The Madness of King George.
Yes, and they made it into a movie.
And that went into a movie, but whereas British TV and Australian TV had seen Nigel Hawthorne for quite some years in plays like, or TV series like Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister, and also in stage shows, Nigel Hawthorne was gay. But he, like in the British society, it wasn't a matter of public importance or note or knowledge.
No, he was always out.
He was playing in the US this particular role of The Madness of King George, somehow the press got onto this little aspect and he was outed.
Only outed in America, though, you know, because everybody...
Oh, well, of course, yeah.
Because everybody in England would have known he was gay anyhow, because he lived with his partner for many, many years.
Gay as get out. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We were talking about earlier with Magda controlling to a certain extent how she came out, and we know how Matthew Mitchum controlled his coming out. poor old Nigel Hawthorne didn't actually have quite that luxury.
And his partner was very, very down on the American press for doing it too, up and coming up to the Academy Award nominations. And they gave the Academy Award that year to Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks for Forrest Gump, which I thought was a shocking movie.
But there was Nigel Hawthorne. He'd been playing the role of George III that we referred to in the beginning of this chat.
Yeah.
And they were harping on the madness aspect, the bipolarism that was evident to us with modern eyes on, and the fact that the palace couldn't get any medication of any sort.
Well, they didn't have it in those days.
That's right.
You know, they didn't know. They bled him and they cupped him and they did everything to sort of stop this, what they called madness. They'd cut them and bleed them or stick leeches on them so they'd suck their blood out of them.
Well, that was modern medicine.
Modern medicine of the time, yes, exactly right. But when Nigel Hawthorne won so many BAFTA awards for his acting and everything like that, and he also won Tony Awards on Broadway, he was a very, very talented man, very talented actor.
And Alan Bennett, who wrote The Madness of King George
III, he was a gay man.
He was a gay man, but he demanded Nigel for this particular role because he was such a wonderful character actor.
Yep.
But in the words of Forrest Gump himself, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Hard or soft and centres, okay. Yeah, I prefer the hard ones myself.
Someone else who's got an anniversary around about this time, on the 14th of April 1986, was Kenneth Williams, another UK actor who all his life denied his sexuality, although you would never have ever said that he wasn't anything except gay.
Because all his characters were screaming queens. And yet he denied being gay, and yet his diaries have just been found, and they've been turned into a book. And he apparently was great friends with two young gay men who he met somewhere along the line. One was very well educated, and the other one was a postman. And he used to love to take them to all the swish parties because they had this very erudite, gorgeous-looking, well-connected man and the raffish sort of postman thing. But they've been, and they're still together. These two guys are still alive, and they're still together. And they have never mentioned the fact in any of the conversations about Kenneth Williams. They have kept that so quiet. But the fellow that found the diaries and wrote the book, he contacted them, and they then filled in the gaps for him. Yeah.
Because Kenneth Williams was so freaked out with his sexuality that he couldn't satisfy his desires. And the poor bugger was, you know, really, he was mad in himself.
Yes, but
I won't say he was lunatic or stupid. He was so frustrated and having to live a double life, in effect.
But they said that he was in, that he actually carried the torch for the well-educated, erudite young man, Tom Wayne or something or other his name was. He was the one that Kenneth Williams was sort of carried the torch for, but they never were never physical. It was just always
See, that's the problem. If you're not quite up to terms with your sexuality and you fall in love with somebody you can't have, that's not going to help your general state of mind. And he did suffer from depression, and that would be a fairly common thing in that situation.
Yes.
Where you're deeply in love with somebody and they're not yours. Yeah.
But apparently in his diaries he wrote in two colours, red and blue. Red ones were for his health things, the way he was thinking about himself. And the other one was for his shows and things, about when he'd done doing shows and stuff. Yeah. And apparently that's what they worked it out when they started reading what he'd written.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and so he wrote in red and blue.
Yeah, well, apparently who was putting together his history sussed out this code. The colour coding was easy to crack. Williams wrote in red pen when discussing his health and blue when he had dramatic news. Because he was such a wonderful copperplate writing person, a beautiful script, his moods were reflected in how he wrote the words. Mm.
But the three of them used to go off to Tripoli for great holidays, and they'd go to Italy. They'd chuff off, the three of them together, and they'd go off to gay bars and all the rest of it, and they had a wonderful time together.
Because he was anonymous in Tripoli.
If you ever get a hot chance to listen to Round the Horn, Kenneth Williams is in that.
Yes.
What's he say?
Hello, I'm Julian, and this is my friend Sandy.
And they talk about where they've been to do.
And they were a couple of gay characters within it. Yeah. But also he was in the Carry On films, which are
Screaming Queen in the
which are terribly un-PC these days. But once again, you'll find them on YouTube, I'm sure.
They are very, very funny, if you don't mind a bit of bawdy humour. And it's bawdy.
As I said, non-PC these days. Current.
It was English humour of the time, and
it was.
It allowed Benny Hill to exist and have a career.
Exactly,
so
right, yeah. But must have been terrible to live the life that he lived, being not out, but sort of always in that sort of cocoon.
Yeah. No excuses.
No excuses. No. Be out. Just be proud.
Vegan Trainer.
Joy, out, loud, proud.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. We're having fun. We've been really slipping through the topics today.
But we're going to talk about an interesting subject of international thing.
Well,
now.
A couple of international stories. Yeah. One is actually rather depressing and very sad. Yes, Gordon?
Can I say that we're lucky we live in Australia?
Oh, yes.
I'll just preface what we're going to talk about, because we're lucky we live here and we don't have to live like some people in overseas countries that are completely homophobic.
Yeah. In particular, we're talking about the people living in Chechnya, a mainly Muslim region in southern Russia.
Yeah.
Now, that should tell you already, they're a minority group, they're
That's
contained
right.
in an area, they're not of our blood, the Russians would say.
And the Russians don't like, the Russians are homophobic as well. Well, the people in charge are anyhow.
They are. And so the whole society, much like the Rohingya in Burma, are being persecuted. And especially the gay people, because they are they're a minority of a minority of a minority.
Yeah, but we've got a thing about here about one of them. She's in her 20s, Marco. Yep. She lives in Chechnya. And when her family found out that she was gay, they said to me, either we will kill you or we will lock you up in a psychiatric ward and throw away the key. The only alternative is to undergo exorcism. Now, isn't that a nice thing to do to your daughter? Hello?
Hello?
What century are these people living in?
Yeah.
Well, they go back to the writing of the Quran, I guess, and that's what's in the Quran, so that's what they do. You know?
Well, but it's also the society that they're living in. Yeah, because the Chechen leader maintains that there are no homosexuals in that republic. At all.
Well,
he sounds like a Queensland politician.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. But she went. She's living in a city now in Russia, and she's undergoing all the paperwork to get out of Russia for good and go to somewhere else. The poor woman. Yeah.
But the politicians within Chechnya are saying, even if such people existed in Chechnya, our law enforcement agencies would not need to bother with them, because their own relatives would simply send them to a place from which they would never return.
Now, isn't that a lovely situation? Oh. You know, that's sort of doing very quietly what the bombs are doing in Syria, I would think. You know, it's devastating the whole people and communities and stuff. You know, it's just awful.
And if the Chechnyans want to get out, they've got to apply for a refugee to escape. And then to the country they go to and seek entry, they've got to say why. And the next country mightn't be much more friendly than their own.
Can we tell them to come to Australia but not by boat?
Oh, well, yeah, jump on a plane and you can walk off.
You can walk off and you're right,
Even come past South Africa, maybe.
Yes, that's right. You might be a white farmer.
Oh. I'm not supposed to be political.
Oh, well, you can be political because we're late at night.
Sarcastic,
yes, 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 that's right. And we're full of sarcasm when it gets to things like this, I can assure you, because it's just not human nature. It is just bloody terrible.
Last week we were talking about the PBS system here, not the radio station,
The
pharmaceutical benefits scheme here in Australia, whereby PrEP medicine, anti-HIV control, is now being made available to all people in Australia at a reasonably cheap price.
You get
month.
It for the what it is for the your ordinary medications. If you get a script from your doctor, you get it for the PBS price, rather than having to pay hundreds of dollars for each.
And I think that's about $46 a month, which is totally incredible. And we in Australia believe that this is a change point in our. In the control of HIV here in Australia.
It should eventually wipe out the HIV
Well,
thing.
Long as it can get to everybody in the community that needs it.
And
that's the problem because, as we know, with any virus that...
There's always something a little bit hiding around somewhere.
Yeah, and it's lurking in those, the anti-vaxxers or whatever else and all. What's happened, Phil, in the US?
Well, they're predicting the end of... HIV/AIDS, I guess.
In
America.
All right.
This is the CDC are doing this.
Yeah, Center for Disease Control. But their system is so radically different to ours. I see they're predicting, 3 to 7 years, whereas I would imagine our forecast here is much shorter time frame.
Well, you would hope so.
Eradicate it. Have we got a figure?
Well, no. No one in Australia is because the actual... means of getting the medicine out to the people involved is, I think, the weakest link.
Yeah,
one
of the things is to
chain,
to get it into the indigenous community, which is where they need it as well.
Or people that won't acknowledge the fact that they could be HIV. Even in the straight community here in Melbourne.
But I know I've worked for the AIDS Council for many, many years, and I've seen a lot of people, and I see a lot of people now that are completely having a great time, you know, because of this PrEP, you know. It's wonderful.
Well, it's...
And the Truvada.
It's a load off people's mind because the new status is not HIV positive. The new status to achieve is undetectable and therefore untransmissible.
That's right, yes.
But the challenge in America is to get the medication to those who need it.
Yeah.
Because they will have
much
to pay,
bigger problem here.
They will pay millions. The top dollar over there.
Yeah. Unless somebody can...
Subtitles.
Change society.
The last time I was in America, I was talking to somebody about HIV, and they said that it cost them something like about $15,000 a year for their medication.
Well, that would be a minimum, I would imagine.
Yeah, and he was lucky because he had gone into
a health fund.
It was just like a sweep. They would give 900 people, they'd put your names in a barrel and draw out 900 names, and then you'd get your medication for a year for nothing.
Wow.
And this guy that was working at this bed and breakfast where I was staying, he said he was number 899.
Ooh.
And he was just floating on air, you know. He said, I'm going to save so much money.
I mean, it's an observation. The Americans are super generous.
Up to a point.
But a lot of the things they are generous towards are things that our society gives as part of our social conscience.
Unemployment insurance is something you buy as an employee or your employer buys.
Mm.
And if you were to lose your job, you might get 6 months
paid
unemployment benefits.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no safety net. There's nothing there that they would see as social medicine.
Which
seems to be evil.
Yeah, but they don't. They consider capitalism as the great thing, but socialism is terrible. You know, this is
but
the way.
The money they spend on defence.
Oh yeah.
If they could put that into medicine.
What are we doing here? Billions of dollars to build some submarines that are going to be. You know,
Malcolm, you know, if you're fighting a war in the desert, those submarines are real handy.
Yeah, but they do save somebody's seat too in South Australia because it looked like it was going to get beaten.
But it's not political, Gordon.
No, isn't it?
Oh, how could you be that cynical?
Oh, I must be a cynic, can't I?
I mean, there's no. We do have problems with our own system because there's lots of people coming from war zones
having a hell of a trouble.
with their PTSD or what
PTSD,
it was called.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and we're lucky to the extent that we are lucky, but we are ashamed, I think, to imagine that the government is ignoring those people who've gone to those war zones in our name.
That's right. We've said
them. How dare they be missed out?
They won't look after them when they come home. That's the problem, yeah.
But that's a universal problem. It's not just Australia.
Oh, yeah, but Australians are pretty good at that. I can, you know, it's just they don't acknowledge that these things happened. Like I can go back to my brother.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't recognise the fact that they had been sent up to the atomic bomb tests. Yeah. Mm.
Back in the 1914-18 war, when there was the Spanish flu epidemic, they've actually now determined that the mustard gas that was flooded across the war zones in France and Germany actually activated the flu virus to massive proportions, and the guys in the fields drowned in the own with their lungs filling with their own mucus and stuff that was generated because of the aggression that the mustard gas caused the flu
would affect the lungs
to act within the body. And that's a very nasty thing.
But that's another thing that we're fortunate the times we live in with. We've got these vaccines that can vaccinate you against these
Phil,
things.
You're going to your doctor to get...
This week, yes.
I'm to get going your to, flu shot?
I'm going on this week as well.
Oh, yeah, Gordon, so...
I hope I get the right one because there are two this year.
Yeah, no. So I think they've withdrawn the weak one. They've only got the super version.
That's okay then.
That's good. Mm. And no mustard on your sandwich that day, of course.
No one mustard gas.
I don't think I've got any mustard at home.
Some honey mustard sauce for a while.
There you are. We're going to go out with a little piece of music from Janice Ian, born Janice Eddie Fink, on the 7th of April 1951. An American singer-songwriter and most successful back in the 60s and 70s, her most widely recognized song at 17 was number one on the Billboard chart for quite some time. Mm. But she was in the folk scene and she, at the age of 16, and this is a not very nice part of her history, she met comedian Bill Cosby backstage.
Oops.
And since Janice Ian was underage, she was accompanied by a chaperone while touring. After her set, she'd been sleeping with her head on her chaperone's lap, an older female friend. According to Ian in a 2015 interview, she was told by her then manager that Cosby had interpreted their interaction as lesbian, and as a result, in inverted commas, had made it his business, close brackets, to warn other television shows that Ian wasn't particularly suitable family entertainment and shouldn't be on television because of her sexuality.
What happened to him when the story came out?
Pot calling the kettle black.
Pot and black comes into mind, doesn't it?
Godfather. Yes.
But his was... straight rape, so that's fine.
Later
on, Janice Ian did come out as lesbian, but you're 16, you haven't made your mind up, have you?
No, not really. Some people have, I had, but that was... Yeah, I knew. Thing.
I wasn't a lesbian, though.
Weren't you a lesbian?
Not at that age.
Oh, the lesbian said about that, the better.
Oh.
Thank you very much. And
I'll go home and just
please
ache.
Please apologise to all the lady listeners.
Yes,
thank
we do.
Very
yes.
Much. Yes, indeed. Yes. Well, I think that's about time for us. So let's go out, as I said, with Janice Ian.
Or Janice Fink.
Janice Fink. I'm glad you changed her name.
What made her think of that?
And the little track I've selected is This Train Still Runs, and you can hear a country and western efforts in this.
Well, I'm going to have to get that train if it's still running. Yes.
Well, hopefully, yes. Head on.
I think
home.
I can.
Here we go. Bye for now.
Bye.
Jump the track, weight of the world upon my back, still after all is said and done, this train still runs, it doesn't matter where it's gone, this train still runs, and though the baggage weighs a ton, we carry on, nothing is free.
still runs.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.